Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Ireland's classic
hits. We like a little bit of inspiration on a Monday evening here, and our next guest
is going to provide that. I certainly hope so. I think we all need a bit of inspiration. Jared Morgan is the author of a recently published book called Becoming Your Best Possible Self. His book was initially written as a legacy for his own two sons, and all the profits from the sale of the book will go to the charity Samaritans Ireland. Now, the book contains information on positive psychology and insights from experts. It is a journey to a personal transformation. And he joins me on the line. Good afternoon. Good evening to you, Jared. How are you?
Good evening, Niall. How are you too?
Good. You know, I think we all want to be our best possible self, don't we? Well, we certainly make an attempt to be, but we're not always. So is there a kind of recipe to making it work?
Well, look, it's not really a destination, if you know what I mean. It's an ongoing process, Niall. And I'm nearing 60 now myself. So
I was 60 on Friday, should I say.
Oh, well done.
Yeah.
Do you feel any different, Niall?
I just feel like I've made it.
Right, yeah. Well, there you go. But you do learn lessons along the way, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I actually said to somebody the other day, because people were coming on wishing me a happy birthday the other night on the air, and I said to people, I always remember, maybe I had a very negative view of life, but I always remember, like, when I got to 40, that's a kind of bit of a turning point, right? And when I got to, because maybe that's you're halfway through your life, you go through this kind of what they call the midlife crisis. But I got to 40.
Midlife crisis.
And I kept saying to myself, if I could just make it to Christmas now, I'll be happy. If I make it to the kid's birthday, I'll be happy. If I make it to the summer, I'll be happy. And you just keep setting these targets for yourself to make it. But then I said, when you get to about 60, you stop caring. You know?
Right. Yeah, I know. But I suppose we do learn a few things along the way. And that was the kind of impetus to the book. I was kind of saying to myself, I've had conversations with my sons over the years, you know, and I've told them bits and pieces, but they're always on the move. And I said to myself, before I die now myself, do you know what? I'll put it down what I think I know and what I've researched and learned. You know, I have a background in educational psychology. I was a teacher for 30 years. I was a principal of a college. I was CEO of an ETB. So all of that kind of environment has kind of given me interaction with younger people and adults returning to education. Mm-hmm. So I said,
The kind of rules for life, Jared? Like, one of my rules for life is value yourself, right? Because people forget to value themselves, you know what I mean? And another one of my rules for life is always be good to people on the way up the ladder. You never know when you need them on the way down. These kind of, I suppose, cliches, but they are good cliches. There are no friends in business. All those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, they're pretty good. And your very first one there is actually key to the new approach of positive psychology. Now, positive psychology sounds like, you know, all this mumbo jumbo and, you know, love yourself and you know, be always positive. And people often say, in real life, how can I be like that? But this idea of loving yourself, as you said, is actually so key to the new approach. The old approach, Niall, just in kind of in summary of the research, is showing that, you know, the old approach to happiness and success and kind of getting on is doing and having. And the two outcomes to that are doing is achievements, you know, a whole lot of accolades and achievements. And having is possessions. You know, we all love our stuff. But if we focus on just those two things, they're external things to ourselves, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
And the problem with that is we're never really satisfied with them because we want more, even though, you know, we might say, if I get that yacht now, that 13-foot yacht, I'll be happy because, you know, I'll be able to sail around. But then you see a 60-foot yacht around the corner, and you want that. In other words, it's always looking for more and more. And
are we ever satisfied, or is that just human nature? When we see millionaires like Elon Musk or billionaires like Elon Musk, he's still not satisfied. Yeah. He's the richest man in the world, and he's still not satisfied.
That's right, and he's a whole lot of projects, and he's striving for this, that, and the other. But I mean, he is. Like pursuing some of the things he wants to pursue. But you said loving yourself. The new approach is this approach to, which they're saying is better, is becoming your best self, focuses on doing and having their fine things. But in the very first instance, it's focusing on being your best possible self. And being your best possible self, the outcome to that is self-acceptance, accepting yourself. Now, I go through quite a lot of detail on how that works. It sounds kind of simple, and it sounds maybe even difficult as well. How, you know, and I actually look at the whole science of that. But what I do is, in the book, I try to break it down into, if you like, some of the research and some of my own life experience. That's the kind of structure of the book. And it revolves a bit around mindset. You've heard quite a lot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And mindset, there's different definitions for it. But basically, before we make any decision, basically put it through a filter. So if some situation comes along and we have to make a decision, we put it through a filter of our beliefs, our values, and our attitudes. And then we take the action.
So if you have a negative view of something, in other words, yeah. If you think something is going to fail, and let's say you're embarking on a project, and you think, oh, this is just not going to work. In other words, it most likely won't work because you don't have faith in it. In other words, if you have a more positive view, a positive view of yourself in achieving that goal, you have a better chance of things working for you. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, that's absolutely. Take beliefs then. That those three things are key to the book, and I outline, you know, in detail about beliefs. There's limiting beliefs and there's empowering beliefs. But the belief that you talked about is, you know, it, as Henry Ford saying, thinking makes it so. So, I mean, if you think it's not going to work, it probably won't work. If you think it possibly will work and you'll do everything to make it work, it may well work. Mm. So, I mean, your belief can go one way or the other. It can shape what actually happens. But a very interesting area, and it's something I haven't even done myself. And, you know, in 60 years, someone asked me now a few years ago, he said, what are your actual values? And I said, I value certain things like family and things like that. But I couldn't really kind of list them in detail, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's something that most people don't do. And should we? Is telling us. We should, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I have a list of values. I prioritize, family, rightly, yeah. So family, okay, is the priority. Yeah. And after that, yeah, is my own health and their health, yeah, obviously, as well. And then after that, yeah, is success. Now, and success to me is not money, by the way, can I just point out? Clearly wouldn't, yes, be, yeah, otherwise I'd be working in
and
RTE.
It's not for me as well, writing a book, which is pretty unusual, Niall.
Yeah, if it was money, yeah, I'd be working
in
RTE.
A book,
yeah,
that doesn't have success money. Yeah. I'm not looking for money either, you know?
So success to me is more important than the financial success, if you know what I mean, just the success of achievement.
Yes, yeah. I know what you mean, but do you have some sense of your values, have you?
Absolutely. I have a huge... Now, this might sound egotistical, because I don't want to... I think there's a difference between egotistical and having confidence in yourself. I have a huge confidence in myself and my ability, but I'm not egotistical.
And you're a very good presenter, in fairness to you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. But I think that people I work with and I've worked with throughout the years will say, in comparison to many people in media, because sometimes it's very difficult when you work in media, particularly if you're doing well, not to be egotistical. And I know plenty of people, yeah, in media who are egotistical, but I don't think I am. Now, Jane is, right, nodding her, okay, head to say, no, I'm definitely not. So that's good. I'm glad to see this. She's affirming that.
Okay.
So I think being in control, kind, yes, of,
yeah, it, egotistical to some extent is you actually walk over people to get your success. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That you don't bring other people along with you. And that wouldn't be you, Niall.
I wouldn't damage anybody else's career to, you know, gain, yeah, in my career. I would never do that. And sure. And I know people have often said to me in the past, sometimes you have to be rootless to be successful. But I mean, when we look at, say, the likes of Steve Jobs, for example, who was rootless to be successful, yeah, and treated people like dirt, yeah, I couldn't be like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you're right. And the science tells you that you're right. Mm-hmm. But... you know, have you ever formally sat down and, you know, there's an exercise, I have it in the book, you know, with there's at least 120 values and you go through them and you tick them off and you don't think about them too much, because if you think about them too much, you won't really, you go with your gut feeling on them.
Okay, give us a few of them, Jared. Give us a few of them and I'll take them here for you.
Oh, Okay. Now, for example, now my rank, and you rank them as well. That's a very difficult thing to do as well, okay. When you rank things. But like my personal values at the moment are family and friends, well-being and health, and they're actually the same two you mentioned there.
Yeah.
Growth, which will be personal growth and development, caring, acceptance, fun and happiness. You know, we all want a bit of fun in our lives. Commitment and the environment, I'm quite passionate about it as well. So I've listed all those.
Yeah, well, the environment wouldn't be on my list. I'm sorry. Jane is laughing at me here. I'm not into the whole climate change thing. Pff, take it or leave it. So I mean, that's just maybe just I'm apathetic towards it. That's all.
I understand, but you know, there's a whole big science behind that as well. But so you list your values after a kind of a long, lengthy exercise. It only takes about an hour or two. And you have them there. And it just means if you align your life to your values, that's where the sweet spot is. They're saying if you were doing your to-do list, you know, for tomorrow, and you're looking along the list and you're kind of saying there's very basic things we have to do on our to-do list. We have to put the bin out and we have to do all the cooking and the, you know, dropping the kids and all the rest. They're all essential things. But say your other things on your to-do list, if you quickly look along your values and say they're not really anything to do with my values, or that thing there, you know, going off, you know, to some match tomorrow, and I look along my values and I say, well, look, family's the most important. Maybe I should be calling to my mother, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or helping out something. I know they're having a problem in the family. And maybe I'll help them out and I won't go to the match tomorrow. In other words, you're aligning your life and your priorities and your activities to your values in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people doing it. Research has shown 3-4% have ever even formally done it. Now, most of us in our head know what's important, but we actually need to list them. That's what the science is telling us. So that they're at the forefront all the time. I have them on my phone and sometimes I'm writing a list and saying, they're only superfluous things. They're not really moving and aligning myself to my values.
Mm-hmm. And do you think we're all capable of being better people or being our best possible self? Are we all capable of it? Or are there some people that are just lost causes?
I'd never say that. And to some sense, I tell you why some people feel they're lost causes, Niall, is that often they're comparing themselves to some other people, okay? And they're saying, look what he's doing or she's doing, okay? And in a way, the science here is telling us this positive psychology science.
Hang on. We've lost your line there. I'll get you straight back. I'll get you straight back, Jared. Unfortunately, we've lost your line. We're talking about being your best possible self. And the reason we're talking about it is we're talking to Jared Morgan, who is a author of a recently published book called Becoming Your Best Possible Self. And as I said, his book was initially written as a legacy for his two sons. But the profits of the sale of the book will go to the Samaritans Ireland to help other people, of course. And Jared, by the way, has two books on the subject, a lecturing and a high diploma in education students at Maynooth and University, by the way, during a 20-year period of management roles as a deputy principal and principal of a school. So the man knows exactly what he's talking about. He's also executive coaching and educational psychology background from the University College of Dublin, DIT. And basically, I suppose what he's looking for or what he wants for everybody is to be the best possible self. And I think you all know exactly what that means, don't you? Because there are times in our lives when you do something and you think, I could have done that better. And he's right about the football game. You know what I mean? Rather than going to the football game, you know, I probably should have spent time with the kids because after all, I'm working all week. So you're working all week and you have a Saturday off. And rather than spending your time with your young kids and you're going to miss those milestones, you know, you go to the pub with the lads or you go out to a football game or you watch something else or you do something, which I kind of believe is selfish. That's why I was never a person who kind of went out with the lads to football games, as Jared talks about, or I was never that kind of person. I would never have gone away on my own. Any spare time that I had, because I do work quite a lot, I would spend it with family because to me, that is the most important thing. Now, obviously work has to come first in certain circumstances because you have to make money to provide for said family as well. So, sorry, getting back to Jared. I lost his line there for a second. Jared, sorry about that. I do apologise.
Okay, Niall, I thought you went very silent on me there. You were contemplating what I was saying about values.
I was trying to explain to the listeners, when we talk about, you know, prioritising things, sometimes we want to prioritise certain things, but life just doesn't allow us to. For example, I gave an example. Sometimes you do have to prioritise your job over your family, because if you don't, you could lose the same job and not be able to provide for your family to be prioritising for your family. So in other words, you are doing it to prioritise your family. Do you understand the point I'm making?
Yes, but sometimes the fact that you are able to think that way, you're saying, well, look, my family is important, hence I have to do this job. You are aligning yourself still to your family, even though you're not spending as much time with your family that you would like to. But you're still, in doing that job, you're aligning yourself to your priority.
Yeah.
Because if you weren't doing it, you wouldn't be providing for the family.
Yeah, and that's a kind of man thing, isn't it? I hate to sound sexist on the air, right? But it is, I don't know whether it's in our DNA, and sadly that's why we see so many men taking their lives when they come to financial ruin. I mean, I don't know whether it's in our DNA that we feel that we have to provide. Maybe it's a bit of a problem. I've always felt like that in my life, that I feel that I'm failing if I'm not providing.
Yeah, that is an issue. And again, the psychology that goes deep into that, and it's the hunter-gatherer, if you like, going back to our past, and often men were, just purely from a physical point of view, they were the hunters and gatherers. So it's in our DNA, if you like. It's there, but it's, you know, people have flourished even though they weren't the main provider, and because of certain circumstances they can't be provider, and you know, somebody else in the family picks up the slack. But it is difficult psychologically for men and for women, I'm sure, to you know, if they're unemployed, for example, or whatever. Now, I mean, some people, you know, switch unemployment to, you know, I'm not unemployed. You reframe it. I'm not unemployed. I'm employed looking for employment.
All right. Okay.
And we're very, you know, they reframe what their position is, rather than feeling, look, I'm not providing for my family. In fact, often the time, you know, maybe they're lying in bed and feeling sorry for themselves, where in fact, if they were unemployed, they should be employed finding the employment. And that means getting up now, sorry, you know, it means getting up at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning and being first up and literally doing everything to try and get that employment.
In relation to what we were talking about earlier,
looking at it.
You know, the egotistical bit we were talking about earlier on, is there a fine line between being confident, which gets you, does well for you in life, and having faith in yourself, and being cocky? Is there's a fine line there, isn't there?
There absolutely is, you know, and the cocky side of it, to some extent, often means that they talk about in the psychology sometimes, you have people called go-getters and go-givers. Now, the go-getters will do anything and are very cocky and will do anything to get what they want at the expense of everyone else, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when you're being cocky, and that's when you're being kind of egotistical and not taking into account other people's opinion. And, you know, you're the only person in the room with an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens.
That doesn't work well on this show, can I just point out?
I wouldn't recommend that. And like, yeah, exactly. And you can hear it, and people get uncomfortable with it. Now, sometimes you have people who are extroverts naturally, and they're very confident, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're cocky. And in the Irish psyche, we're very quick to down somebody who's getting too uppity.
That's almost like begrudgery, isn't it? It's like that very famous story that was told to me once about the Irish and the American walking down the road. And as they're walking down the road, they see these huge big gold gates. And they're looking through the gold gates, and there's a guy with a cigar in his mouth lying by the pool, and fancy blondes around him bringing him drinks and all sorts of things. And the American guy says, see that guy? I'm going to be like him someday. And the Irish guy says, see him, I'm going to kill him someday. So it's that kind of Irish mentality of begrudgery.
Yeah, yeah,
we don't like to see people doing too well, do we?
Yeah. No, and the Americans are particularly good at it. You know, I mean, in America, you know, kids salute the flag every day from day one in school and in kindergarten school. And they're told to be positive and told to be, you know, confident. And, you know, it's recognized. And even, you know, if you fail in business in America, it's actually a badge of honor. Where if you do something here and you fail, it's considered, you know, you're a failure. And you know, so really, we probably need to shift the psychology on that. But being cocky isn't to be recommended. It often is a negative.
I was going to say, where, you know, judging by what you've just said a minute ago, you've probably answered my question. Answer my question for me in relation to Irish people in general. I always get the feeling that Irish people are quite depressed all of the time. We're quite down on ourselves all the time. That, you know, when you look at, and I can even tell, say, for example, when we have guests on the air, right? And I don't mean you or any particular callers or anything like that. If I get an American guest on the air, you know, political correspondent talking about Donald Trump or whatever it is.
Indeed.
They're very outspoken. They're confident. Even just your average citizen in America, they seem much more confident. Irish people as a whole, are we positive thinkers or are we not positive thinkers?
We could learn a lot from the Americans. Now, we don't want to turn into Americans. We have our own culture. But there's a man called Dr. Seligman is his name, and he's the father of positive psychology. And the positive psychology is not mumbo jumbo. It's actually scientifically proven, if you like, strategies. Now, I use a lot of them and mention a lot of that research in the book. And in a way, what the positive psychology is about is, you know, psychology to some extent traditionally looked at what was wrong with people, whereas positive psychology is looking at how people can flourish. It's a fascinating area. I've been studying it for 40 years. I have used it in my own life. It is useful. One of the things I look at, the kind of the last part of mindset I look at in the book is 50% of the book. It's attitude. Now, attitude is about approach. Now, some people say you've got an attitude. I don't really mean that. It's what your approach is to certain things that are definitely going to come up in your life. And these are the legacy items I wanted to teach my sons to read the book. Now, I've handed them the book, and I don't know if they're even going to read it, but at least I feel happy that I have.
And is there exercises in the book? I mean, does the book go through
there
kind of
exercise.
Yeah, okay.
Every single attitude, say there's 20 attitudes in it, it's divided over three sections of attitudes, which are really, really important. There's attitudes to situations, you know, situations that happen in your life, attitudes to yourself. And you talked about self-love and self-acceptance. That's huge. And then the last one is attitudes to other people. Now, the big area that I've studied is this whole area of attitude to service, for example.
Yeah.
You know, your contribution to this world. Often people are very unhappy because they're saying, all I'm doing is working 9 to 5. I need to do this for the family. But we've all been given something. And really, by giving back, that's a huge part of life.
Oh, no, I'm a firm believer in the world needs everybody. You know, and everybody plays a role.
Yeah,
we're all part of the jigsaw puzzle.
We are. And there's a study by Seligman that talks about, say you wanted to do two experiments. One was you tell someone, do your favorite activity. And, you know, say you want to watch your favorite TV program or whatever, and tell us how you feel after that. And it's all very positive. Mm-hmm. Great, it's my favorite thing. And then they said, do one act of kindness to some other person, a random person or whatever, and review how you feel after that. And they did this
But you shouldn't do that for selfish reasons. I hear people all the time saying,
No.
I gave a fella on the street, you know, 10 euro today because he was homeless. But sometimes people do that to make themselves feel better rather than make the homeless person feel better.
I don't mind about that too much because that's a win-win situation.
Okay.
You're feeling better about it, And the person on the street has €10 or the €3 you gave him.
Up on the deal.
That's a win-win. Yep, well, no problem. And, yeah.
Go ahead, Jared. Unfortunately, I'm running out of time rapidly, Jared. But look.
You're running out of time. I understand. Yeah.
That doesn't sound very positive, does it? No.
No, I know you have time. And I'm delighted that you've given me the time. The book is available on Amazon. It's a Kindle version. The Kindle version is something like €3 or €4. All the profits from the book go to the Samaritans, 100% of that. It's a bit unusual for an author to do that, but it's part of, if you like, one of my ways of giving back.
That's so, what a great idea and a wonderful thing to do. So the book, for people who want to know, is called Becoming Your Best Possible Self, and it's by Jared Morgan.
That's it.
And Jared, it's available at all the usual outlets. I have people texting in there wondering what the name of the book is. So it's called "You're Becoming Your Best Possible Self." Jared, it's been lovely talking to you, and I'm going to have positive thinking from now on. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Niall, and keep up the good work in the show.
Thank you very much indeed. You're so welcome.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show.